Today, it's 21 days to 1984. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one that is post covering finance and property news. Today I'm joined by Robbie Barwick from the Citizens Party. Hi, Robbie.
Hi, Martin.
Now, this is a very important conversation because there is a piece of draft legislation that's out for comment at the moment, which is extremely worrying because effectively it's about controlling the media.
It is about controlling the media. And in honor of that, I've worn my favorite shirt. Don't shoot the messenger, my Assange shirt. And what Assange reminds you of is the media can lie and produce disinformation and misinformation when they're doing what the government wants. When they're not doing what the government wants and holding the government to account, governments aren't happy with that. And lately, though, we've had a very corporate media, which tends to err on the side of doing what the government wants. And the only balance to that has been this phenomenon that we're on right now, social media. And we have this bill, and it's rightly called Orwellian, that's being proposed for the Australian Parliament, which will regulate the truth, whereby the government will regulate the truth on social media. And when a government regulates the truth, that is straight out of 1984. And as we'll publish in our magazine this week, is it a coincidence that this year is the 120th birthday of George Orwell?
Makes you wonder, doesn't it? But I mean, this is really serious because, of course, we know that, and I've worked, you know, with mainstream journalists for quite a number of years, and they are more and more careful about what they can say and what they can't say, particularly because of funding for the ABC and those sorts of things. So we know that the mainstream media tends to veer towards what the government wants them to say. And there's no counterpoint other than the stuff that we do, right, through social media that says, hang on a moment, there's another point of view, there's another story. And, you know, look at the cash ban, look at our work on regional banking, right, and how that's taken off. It's only because we are doing some of these things through social media that we're actually, well, we're creating a few waves, but very important waves in the interests of the people. And now, of course, rather than actually government responding appropriately, what they're trying to do is basically shut down anything that doesn't chime with their view of the world.
Yep. I remember back in 2019, Martin, speaking of the journalists in Australia, back in December 2019, we got the first hearing into the bill to ban cash transactions over $10,000, which we went on to defeat. You know, thanks to the combined effort of your channel and our party and that is the Citizens Party and of course John Adams' work, and John got to testify in the second hearing. But in that first hearing, the then Senator Rex Patrick revealed something that I found quite extraordinary, because that earlier that year, the Australian Federal Police had famously raided the ABC and the journalist Annika Smethurst, and this was quite shocking, but of course the government had a justification for it. Rex Patrick revealed in those hearings in December that after that happened, all the couple of hundred journalists whose names he had on his phone as contacts switched to the encrypted app Signal, which meant, by definition, they were afraid of the Australian government. And in a healthy democracy, it's supposed to be the other way around. The government is supposed to be afraid of them. And that is a way that our mainstream media, that is one piece of evidence about how our mainstream media has been cowed, and therefore do not rely on them to report the truth that truly pushes the envelope. And yeah, we are it. So what the government has contrived here is a pretext which is harmful misinformation and disinformation. And because it's harmful, there must be restrictions on it. And there's a problem right there, because those three words, misinformation. Misinformation is defined as false information that is accidentally false. Disinformation is deliberately false information. And harmful is defined fairly broadly. But the point is, those three words are the crux of this bill, that those three definitions working independently or together can be a grounds to censor social media, but they are individually open to incredibly broad interpretation. And therefore, that gives the government sweeping powers to attempt to regulate truth so they can shut down the kinds of discussions that we can do. And yeah, they will use examples like the explicit example they're using is 5G causing COVID, and how that led to, in Australia and other countries, that led to people burning down or attempting to burn down 5G towers. Now, and that did happen. In fact, my brother-in-law was working on those towers in Melbourne in 2020, and he saw the kind of aggression that he was subjected to as a technician working on such towers. And you can always find those kinds of examples, though, Martin. You always can. The problem is the tiny percentage of people who will believe that piece of information, such as that one, the 5G one, and then act on it, convinced that it's true, and so act on it in a harmful way. If they hear, I mean, let me ask you this. Do you think if the government suddenly suppressed all discussion of that piece of information on the grounds that it's false, that it'll convince them? It'll convince them the opposite.
Exactly. They'll say, well, it's just further conspiracy. It reinforces what they thought. Yeah.
And so they won't just burn down one tower. They'll think it's their moral duty to go burn them all down because they've had the confirmation from the government's actions. Yep. Right? And this is why, you know, one of the bizarre things here, Martin, is that this is leading us to have a debate about free speech, and that's been a big debate for quite a while now. But this was a settled issue hundreds of years ago. Wise people centuries ago came to the conclusion that any restriction on free speech for whatever reason is more dangerous than the worst free speech. As bad as free as there is some bad free speech out there, 100%, but the restriction is more dangerous because what that allows is a totalitarian atmosphere in which good speech, right information can be suppressed by bad governments. And that's why free speech is in the US Constitution, for instance. It's not just in the US Constitution. Let me read you a quote. This is from Article 19 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which was adopted in 1948, and Australia was one of the countries to draft it. It states, Article 19, everyone has the right to freedom of opinion and expression. This right includes freedom to hold opinions without interference and to seek, receive, and impart information and ideas through any media and regardless of frontiers. That's what's in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which we helped to draft in 1948. What the Australian government is proposing now tears that up 100%.
Yeah, and just to go back to 1984, the book, now, Orwell, who was an experienced journalist as well as an author, right, could see the writing on the wall and could see the power of the media versus the power of the government. And of course, the story there was particularly based on the concept of government determining what truth was, the government able to flex truth to fit their agenda, and basically there was no recourse. That is the scary thought, and what we're seeing in this draft legislation is precisely the same thing. So completely an antithesis to what that free speech doctrine is about. And I agree with you, and anybody who thinks about this will I think agree. Once you start turning the dial down on free speech, then effectively it's a slippery slope. And the point there is that the only way to deal with this is to allow free speech and to allow public discourse, because through public discourse, truth will out versus not, right? As soon as you start putting the lid on it, what that does is drives it underground. So this is a completely pernicious, disgraceful attempt, and it's completely unnecessary as well.
Well, of course, but you know, it would be more unnecessary, Martin, if governments had credibility. They've shot, their credibility is completely shot, but they're incapable of self-reflection and actually acknowledging that, and therefore acting to regain their credibility. So what they've done is put everything down to misinformation and disinformation. And an aspect of this that I'm particularly worried about is the blaming of that on foreign actors, because then that feeds into the agenda to keep perpetuating wars around the world and start new ones, right? Because you can demonize these supposed foreign actors, such that even though, I kid you not, there's an official report in the United States, the Durham report, that proves that everything that was said in late 2016 and 2017 and 2018 about the Russians rigging the US election, right? The Trump election was rubbish. A few weeks ago on ABC Four Corners on a Monday night, they ran a documentary that just repeated all those lies from 2017 as if it was true. And it's just an example that this is an establishment that has tried to deflect from their own failings by saying, oh no, anyone questioning our failings must be controlled by overseas. And that's not new, right? J. Edgar Hoover was trying to run that line about Martin Luther King back in the 1960s, that somehow he was controlled by the commies, because that suited the establishment to try and deflect from the message of the protests that they were receiving. And they don't want to do that, right? And this is you know, it's like these this generation of politicians haven't learned the principles that you're supposed to learn from history, let alone the lessons of it, and they're all wannabe little totalitarians who turn around though and say it's for our own good. Now, can I just give you some specifics on the bill? Because I think people need to know that some of the specifics, just so that they understand that when the government comes up with all these reassurances, how flimsy those reassurances actually are. So essentially, with this bill, nobody's going to be fined for what they say online. What's more likely to happen is you'll try and type something online, on Twitter, on Facebook, under a YouTube comment, post a YouTube video, something like that, right? You're going to try and make a post of some sort, and you're wondering, why isn't this posting? Why isn't this posting? And what you don't know is that the social media platform, in order to comply with this bill so that they don't get fined, what is it, 2% of their global turnover? I mean, that's like $5 billion for Facebook, all right? The Australian government thinks they're going to fine Facebook $5 billion. So that they don't do that, they will have to engineer the settings on their platforms so that anything that comes under a broad category is not allowed to be posted. Now, we saw this in COVID. We saw versions of this in COVID. What we saw is aggressive pulling down of stuff. We saw people, and your channel was no exception, you had to adapt and learn not to say certain words in order to get around the programmed out, because they can only do these things through algorithms, right? In order to do that. And that was, the government would have tried to give the impression that that was just a measure that was necessary for the times, right? Well, we always knew that trying to situate this in the context of COVID was groundless, because our party was actually reporting on this intention of censor social media in 2019. And it started with the Christchurch massacre in New Zealand, because that was live streamed on Facebook. And of course, as our legal analyst pointed out when he did a legal analysis of this bill, there's a million things online that nobody's going to disagree when you say that should be taken down. Nobody's, you know, that shouldn't be up on Facebook, the live streaming of the Christchurch massacre. It shouldn't have been allowed to happen, the live streaming of the Christchurch massacre. No one's going to quibble with that. But Scott Morrison, the then Prime Minister, and Jacinda Ardern, the then Prime Minister of New Zealand, a few months after the Christchurch massacre, they joined together in this thing called the Paris Declaration, where they announced then that that should be the catalyst for a way to censor social media. And we raised the question then, how do you define who gets to say what is harmful, right? Who gets to say what is disinformation? You know, it's one thing for the platform, Martin, to act like, say, the publisher of a newspaper and off their own bat exercise some judgment over whether some content should be allowed on their platform or not. That's like an editorial decision. But to impose it as policy with parameters top down from the government, then that really does get into 1984 stuff. And that's what's going to happen with this bill. Now, to their reassurance is, don't worry, you the individual, will be able to say what you like. Of course it's true. But they've taken away from you your power to intersect the way the people have developed power in the last few decades around the rise of social media. They're trying to take that away, right? Because that has been so inconvenient to them. The other thing is this is the most Orwellian part, in the sense they explicitly exempt from any consideration of misinformation and disinformation any communication by any government. That's in the bill. So the federal government, state governments, local government, that's all exempt from this bill. None of that can be considered misinformation or disinformation. And right there, that tells you everything you need to know. Where you and I are old enough, we live through to this day, and that's why I wore my shirt, the single most notorious act of misinformation and disinformation that's had the most far, the most far-reaching consequences to this day, was the deliberate lies that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. And that was governments doing it. And that was the United States government doing it. It was the British government doing it. And it was our government doing it. In fact, I'll always despise John Howard for one thing in particular, which was there was only two people in the world that tried to connect Saddam Hussein to 9/11. Because Saddam Hussein hated al-Qaeda. He had nothing to do with al-Qaeda. He had nothing to do with 9/11. But when America invaded, most Americans thought Saddam had something to do with 9/11. Two people went so far as to explicitly make the connection. One was, you know, the Darth Vader of our times, Dick Cheney, the Vice President of the United States. And the other was little Johnny Howard, who I remember when he used to be called Honest John Howard. He would have just received a message from the freaking White House saying, we need you to say this, and he did. Disinformation, and that was governments. And we invaded a country, we killed 1 million people, and we set off a chain of events in the Middle East and beyond that are having consequences to this day. Trust me, the people in Russia who've made their decisions have looked at those invasions the Americans have done and said, don't try and preach to us. And I won't divert any more into that, but that's an example of what I'm talking about. Far-reaching consequence to this day. And yet this bill exempts government communication entirely as any kind of consideration of misinformation, disinformation. And the final aspect of the bill that I want to highlight, Martin, is, and this is, I think, our legal analyst pointed this out, and this is, I haven't seen this anywhere else. So this is a scoop. They have the way they define social media, these platforms that are covered by this bill. You think Twitter, you think Facebook, you think the biggest ones, but actually the way it's defined could include even a website. If it's a media aggregator, they use a term like a media aggregator, it could be a website. I mean, our website is a media aggregator. We got aggregations of articles on our website, right? So it could include a website. It wouldn't just apply to the YouTubes of this world. It applies to also YouTube's much smaller competitors like Rumble and BitChute, etc., and any other variations on those. And then it imposes these onerous regulatory conditions. And in fact, there's a code that they've invited the big platforms to participate in designing the code, and they will participate, and that will allow them to come to even expand these regulations more in a way that they, because they are big and have a lot of money, can comply with, but it'll be totally suffocating for small alternatives to the big ones to comply with. And then, so what that actually does, in the name of supposedly regulating these social media platforms, these our government will be giving a boost to the big guys like Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, and an advantage over the small guys, and you'll get a further concentration of social media. And if you want to read a good book, it's called Surveillance Valley by Yasha Levine, and it's about Silicon Valley's relationship to the American police state, the American security state, the NSA, etc. And all these big ones, all the big platforms, their Facebook, Twitter, you know, YouTube, Google, etc. They're all you know, contractors to the Pentagon and the NSA and the military industrial complex, etc. They're the approved guys, right? And if they can rig it against the alternatives, so that even in this world of social media, we can only use these big guys, they will, and that's what this bill looks like it does.
Absolutely. So we've got, 21 days? The exposure draft is up and out, and we'll put the links below. But they are asking for input. So this is a really, really important opportunity for ordinary citizens to express their point of view. And, you know, whether you agree or whether you don't agree, it's up to you. We're not saying just follow what we're saying, but think about it. Think about the potential loss of ideas, the loss of freedom, the potential for governments to determine what you think and how you think it, back to 1984 again, because that's what this is about. And so this is a really important opportunity to say, no, we don't endorse this. We don't support it. It should not be allowed to continue down this path.
No, exactly. If governments didn't have these options and they were worried about the fact they've lost all credibility, they've lost the public's trust, you know what that would force them to do? Actually change and win the public's trust back by their actions, not their words. Instead, they're going down this path of suppressing the public's expression of their lack of distrust, right? And look, big caveat, I hate misinformation and disinformation. In my position, and I'm not saying it's unique, Martin, you get plenty of it too, I get flooded with it. I am constantly fact-checking and debunking things. It drives me batty. I'm looking at stuff that, and this is from the general public, that gets bandied around, and I see the most far-fetched, ridiculous claims about the government imaginable, and it doesn't take me very long to debunk it, and it can be totally infuriating. I've seen some disinformation that's so deliberately crafted to be as disruptive and destabilizing as possible. It makes me really worried. But the alternative is still much, much, much worse. Much, much, much worse. That's the bottom line. The only way you deal with these things is to have a public discourse, as you said, otherwise you drive it in the ground. So now you've got an opportunity to have a public discourse. If you want to be inspired by how this process can work, as I referenced earlier, in 2019, we beat a variation on this type of thing, which was the attempt to ban cash transactions. And it started off, Martin, with you and me me representing the Citizens Party and John Adams doing videos that a lot of people watched about that ban, that attempt to ban cash. And we only had a couple of weeks then to encourage people to make submissions to the equivalent process that this is at now, which is the consultation on the exposure draft. And we know then back in 2019, we were able to flood it with submissions. And when we did a FOI request later that year, in fact, Aaron Isherwood from our office did it, the government the Treasury admitted that they got over 6,000 submissions in the space of a couple of weeks to a process, an exposure draft consultation that usually got about 30. 6,000, that's what we generated. So we need to go, we need that kind of attention on this now. Now, I know a lot of people have already been talking about it. Even the Human Rights Commission in Australia has come out criticizing this bill. The government so far has deflected that criticism, but a lot of people, and I mean a lot of people have expressed real concern here. So there's a great chance to be able to beat it. And the priority, though, is you making a submission. Now, a submission is not a lawyer's analysis. It's just you expressing your opinion. That's what your right to freedom of speech is. You want to make your opinion as accurate as possible, but just send an email, click on the link below. It takes you to the page, and you have the option to upload a submission or click or send an email, whatever works for you best. Express your opinion, and I hope you express the objection that this is that there's no benefit for the public good of the government going down the path of censorship in this way, none whatsoever. And be as direct as you want to be, right? But make sure you express your opinion, because if we can flood that in the next 21 days with as many direct opinions from Australian citizens as possible, that's the first shockwave that'll hit the building, hit Parliament, and the government will realise, well, you know, this is not going to be a walk in the park. And then if they persist, there'll be other stages to intervene, because it's got to go, the whole bill's got to be voted three times in the House, three times in the Senate to become law, et cetera. So we'll keep fighting it. But you have an opportunity now to start the process with the biggest message imaginable by flooding this exposure draft consultation with submissions.
Yeah, thanks, Robbie. Well, we'll put links and things below. Limited time again, but we've proved we can do it. So let's get back on the horse and fight the next battle. This is about the interests of the people. This is about preserving rights and freedoms that have been long part of the way we do things and unfortunately are being eroded left, right and centre. So this is another critical example where we have to take a stand thus far and no further.
Yep, and we always will.
Robbie, thanks very much. Appreciate your time. And you back on maybe the live show next week, and we can pick up the progress and also cover a few other issues that we're chatting about at the moment, because there are so many fronts on which we have to preserve our freedoms. Thank you very much. See ya.
Thanks, man.
Cheers.